And we are on the air, Liberty on the air. Welcome to another show. I'm in studio with Ken Van Tassel. We are still, I think, WRKO, AM 680. And we are talking in the Christmas season about a couple of important topics. The topic for our show is honesty, liberty, and honesty in politics. But this is a season where honesty plays a big role in people's lives, right? Santa Claus is watching you. He finds out what knows whether you're naughty or nice, and honesty is an important part of that. But I think a lot of times parents set a precedent of dishonesty with the Santa story.
Not only Santa, what about Elf on the Shelf?
Elf on the Shelf.
They're telling kids that this elf is moving around their house by itself at night.
Interesting.
Watching them.
So I'm not quite familiar with that. That's a new thing. I've seen posting pictures.
I'm not quite that familiar with it either, but it's a relatively new trend. It's like this little red elf that, you know, the parents move it around each night. And
okay.
Then they tell their kids that the kids believe that it's moving around the house.
Interesting.
It's like Santa's helper, I believe, and it keeps watch over you leading up to Christmas.
So sure that you're my news feed is filled with pictures of G.I. Joe throttling Elf on the Shelf or various other household protectors, pets, etc., taking him away. But so that's a fascinating.
We've all seen the movie Small Soldiers. So
were you now? Ken, were you ever told that Santa was real? Do you recall believing that Santa was real?
I don't think I was ever told Santa was real.
Yes,
I don't think I was ever told anything about Santa. Maybe I just picked it up based on what other kids were saying around the holiday times. But I definitely don't remember my parents coming to me and saying, Santa's real, and this is what he does. He comes on December 24th and brings presents.
I was a skeptical child no matter what, and I was raised Jewish, so I never believed in Santa. But I mean,
well, when Santa came, you knew something was wrong.
Well, exactly. Although, I mean, we were sort of a blended family in that my mother grew up, or her mother was Christian, and we always went down to their house in Florida for Christmas. So there was a Santa part of the story, but I mean, I'd always been dubious about various aspects. Like, I mean, I got in trouble in nursery school when they told me.
Do they have discipline in nursery school?
Well,
at your nursery school.
In my nursery school, they did, right. It was a Jewish nursery school.
Oh, and, well, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. And so they told us, oh, you know, God had three, or Adam and Eve had three children, Cain, Abel, and Seth. And I'm like, who'd they marry? Where'd the rest of the kids come from? There is a biological binary problem here. So Santa was, I was never going to believe in Santa. My family, my brothers raised his kids to believe in Santa, which lasted until they met my sister's kids who were like, you guys are idiots. It's your parents who are Santa Claus. So,
now that I'm thinking back, my parents might have been implicitly guilty in it because I would get presents that said from Santa.
Right. Well, we did that. Well, although my parents would write like Hanukkah Harry, but also, I mean, all sorts of other things like, you know, from Abraham Lincoln and stuff like that. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, they made things up.
Well, he's a vampire. So.
A vampire killer. Abraham Lincoln's a vampire killer.
Oh, excuse me.
That's an excellent movie. Everybody should see it. Good holiday fun. But when we're talking about, you know, sort of these white lies, these things that we tell each other to improve, you know, smooth over the holidays or, you know, deceive children or whatever is the reason that we're telling these lies, they've reached into our political conversations as well.
Yeah, I mean, I believe most of it for kids is really to try to help with behavioral management. And in some ways, it's been hijacked to control behavior management of adults.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Because there's a lot of adults like that. For you think about, you know, right at the end of the year, Santa Claus is going to come.
Right.
At the end of your working career, who's going to be there for you, Ken?
My pension plan?
Your pension plan.
My 401k?
Your Social Security.
Well, that's not going to be
the
there.
Government's, no. Well, that's the lie that we're telling ourselves right now. Now, I mean, first of all, I mean, Social Security's
tis the season. This year when you file your taxes, throw a little extra to the Fed so we can cover our Social Security liability.
Well, Social Security is really three lies for the price of one. And I apologize to all the vets out there.
Sounds like value.
I know I'm stealing that from MREs, Meals Ready to Eat. They made up the thing, Meals Ready to Eat, or three lies for the price of one. But in this case, Social Security, right? So the first lie is the idea that you are putting money away that is going to be returned to you at some point in the time. Because that's never been true. At no point in time has any money that anybody ever put into Social Security been returned to them.
It's not a savings account.
It's not a savings account. Essentially, it's a giant slush fund.
Slush fund needs to have money in it, I think, to be
honest. Well, it does. It clearly
has some money in it.
Periodically, every paycheck, I look on my, not anymore this year, but.
But are the liabilities from debt borrowed against it greater than the amount they take in? I don't actually know off the top of my head.
I would say yes. Yes. In fact, I know for sure that currently right now, the liability against Social Security is greater than what Social Security is taking in.
So there's no money in the fund.
There's no money in the fund, but I mean, it goes in and it goes out.
Sure.
So what happens is that
everybody
who's making a paycheck knows that if you look at your paycheck, you can see that there's a deduction on your paycheck that goes into Social Security. Now, interestingly enough, it's capped, right? So if you make more than, I believe the number this year is $118,000 a year, you don't pay any Social Security on anything after that. Social Security is essentially a 4% tax on the first $118,000 you make, and then after that, nothing. The argument is that people who make more money than that will never get that much money back. And, you know, there's all these other interesting aspects of Social Security, like when you retire, you get different amounts of money. If you retire at 62, you get $2,000 a month. If you retire at 70, you get $3,700 a month. It's a big difference in lasting out. But the fundamental lie that it's actually going to be there, that's based on...
If you retire at 80, they send the deep state to execute you to make
70?
Sure that you don't get the full payout.
Well, interestingly enough, at 70, you are forced to start taking your Social Security.
Right, or else the deep state agents would come and get you. Everyone
yes,
knows this.
Exactly right. So,
fact, not opinion.
The second lie of Social Security is the idea that Social Security is actually incredibly busted, that there's nothing we could do to save it. Because really, if we did just get rid of this one part of what makes Social Security a regressive tax, it would be solvent. If we taxed all your income at 4%, so everybody makes over $118,000 would still continue to be taxed on their income, and that would go into Social Security. You can make an argument that it's unfair because you're never going to get that much money back.
Well, yeah. What would the top earners get back when they retire? Would they get back the amount equal to what they paid in?
We would assume that there's still a cap in terms of what you can get back.
Right. So,
but if you believe in the homo deus,
so you're going to just flip it into a progressive tax, Dan?
No. Well, it's not progressive. It would be flat.
It'd be progressive because the benefits paid out to high income earners will just be stuck giving extra money.
They would just have to live longer. But they might.
Well, we need roads, Dan.
Because the super wealthy live longer anyway.
Sure, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the whole point of this homo deus theory, is that people who have a tremendous amount of money are going to be able to take advantage of the ultimate in medical technology. And medical technology is getting better and better every year. So, you know, pretty soon there's going to be artificial kidneys, artificial livers, artificial lungs. Those things are probably going to happen in our lifetime. They're going to be incredibly expensive, but the wealthy will need that extra Social Security so that they can live long enough to partake of these things.
Well, let me ask you this: for even from the lowest income, lowest earners to the highest earners, for that 4% of their income, do you think they could get a better return elsewhere
their
money?
Why
not just get rid of this awful experiment called Social Security? Let people invest the money how they want,
sure,
and let them come up with how they're going to retire.
The reason why, that's the third lie, right? The third lie is that Social Security is the best you could do because you could do better.
I don't even think anyone's lying saying Social Security is doing well.
I think what they're saying, though, is that if you weren't using Social Security, you would be doing, many people would be doing worse. Like a lot of people wouldn't save anything. And so then you have what caused Social Security come around: elderly people living in squalor, right? Cold in the winter, hungry. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see starving grandmas.
What about a system where Social Security would be involuntary up into a certain level, and then if you make a certain level, you can opt out completely?
Well, that's kind of what it is.
No, but right now, no, that's not what it is, because I'm saying that if you make over a certain amount, you should be able to opt out completely, as in
because
none
you
of
have
your
enough
income.
Money.
Right. You're saying I don't need to partake in the system.
Well, it might
the
be
people that need it to save can continue.
Right. It might, well, that would certainly would be a better system than what we have now.
It might would kind of blend the idea of the people that aren't good planners, that
right,
aren't for retirement, but also the voluntary nature of higher income earners deciding how
well,
to invest their money.
Well, more than that, the idea that you could demonstrate that you are fiscally solvent to take care of yourself.
Good money habits, yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
So that, well, just say, I have an account set aside for my savings. Here it is for public auditing. And if the government says, yeah, you know, you're fine. You keep doing whatever you need to do. We're not going to intervene, anything like that. But for the people who have nothing set aside, they can say to them, look, you know, we're going to have to intervene here because one way or another, the government is going to end up having to take care of you. So we're going to either garnish your wages, which is what Social Security essentially is doing, right?
Sure.
It's garnishing
yeah.
their wages, or find some other way to make sure that you're able to take care of yourself. Because, no, like I said, nobody wants to see starving grannies. Nobody wants to see, you know, what Social Security does, honestly, take care of more than just the elderly. If you're disabled, you can get Social Security. It is meant to be, you know, exactly that, a social safety net. So, Social Security takes care of all those things. If we have a more honest conversation about it, like you and I just had,
yeah,
we actually arrive at better decisions. And so, I think that one of the things that has to happen is when we start talking about political things, a little more honesty gets us a lot further along.
I agree. Yeah, and I think the big problem is that in Washington, honesty does not win you elections.
Right.
No, like there's so few people on Capitol Hill talking about the necessity to, say, raise the retirement age of Social Security.
Right.
Which is a very valid idea.
Yep. Saves a lot of money.
Sure. And people are living longer. There's logical reasons behind that argument.
Yep. People are healthier than
but
ever.
But you have some people across different aisles saying you want people to die.
Right.
Because you want to raise the retirement age.
Well, and so that's it. There's this huge level of hyperbole in our conversations now that, again, gets away from where we are in terms of honesty. And, you know, like, you know, you're talking about this, you want people to die. When we talked about the health care bill, right, there's a tremendous amount of dishonesty about Obamacare, ACA, whatever you want to call it. I mean, the first
was
one
it was, a tax? It wasn't a tax until it was a tax.
Well, that's exactly it. That's the very first. I mean, it's right. There's three big ones. For first of all, right, if you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan, right? That was a lie from day one, and it bothered everybody because you knew it wasn't true because there were certain plans, right? There were plans that people had beforehand where if you were very healthy, you got a good insurance rate. Everything that they said about Obamacare was that those plans would have to go away, and sure enough, they are. There are no plans anymore that are low cost for and only accept people who are healthy.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, has a little asterisk that says, if that plan is still offered after these changes, which
exactly.
is, of course, the caveat
right.
to any
we made
of
all those plans illegal, exactly.
Yeah. Not now, even illegal, or priced them out of the market
right.
with our regulations.
Well, no, but
essentially the same thing.
Right. They were made illegal because these were plans specifically that were only for healthy people. They got rid of all right. plans that were only for healthy people. So, essentially penalizing them. Another one of the big lies, though, of course, was, is it a tax? Is it not a tax? Okay.
It's the shared responsibility payment.
Right. But,
which sounds even dirtier than a tax to me, honestly.
Right. But when the Supreme Court ruled on it, they said it is indeed a tax. The individual mandate was a tax. And case in point,
weren't even arguing that it was a tax. The Supreme Court did legal gymnastics to kind of come up with that.
They said that it is essentially because if it weren't a tax, it would have been illegal.
Right. But they were not touting it as a tax. They were saying, no, this is absolutely not a tax.
Right. They said it's not a tax. Right.
and
to get
the
it passed.
Supreme Court.
Right. But everybody knew that it is fundamentally a tax because everybody had to pay it. You either had to buy insurance or you had
penalty.
To pay this tax, which is what a tax is.
Right.
Right. So there's that lie.
Could you imagine that? What if there was a voter responsibility tax? You either show up to vote or you pay a tax. I think there's a surprising number of people that actually would support that, but I'm not saying that's a good idea. But you see,
right
when government starts trying to coerce involvement,
yeah,
in the system,
it's
that's scary.
Yeah, it's an outstanding point too, because when government gets involved in that level, you don't know what the responses are going to be, because people start to game the system once there is a system around it.
Right.
And that's where we go wrong. And so then, of course, the third lie about Obamacare is that the idea that it didn't make anybody's lives any better. The fact of the matter is that it really did increase coverage for some people.
Yeah.
People who want to say that it didn't make anything better. I mean, we can argue that the cost wasn't worth it, those sort of things. But there are unquestionably people who got coverage because of Obamacare who didn't have it before. And so to deny that, to deny any of those things, they're all equally dishonest. And if we're not going to have an honest conversation about what's going on, we're not going to be able to resolve these problems. Now,
well, people in Massachusetts were already enjoying RomneyCare, so.
Right. We already had RomneyCare, but interestingly enough, now that the individual mandate has gone away, right?
I mean, now we have the Romney mandate still in place, right?
I don't think so.
I believe so. I would believe so, yes. No, I think it's still Massachusetts
state
law.
No, we had to throw mass care. We think we had to throw away our system. We were
I don't think so. I think they updated Mass Health to comply, but I don't think it's gone.
Justin O'Donnell, call in.
Yes, our resident healthcare expert.
Exactly. So
I got a comment from Peter Everett on Facebook.
Oh yeah, what does Peter have to say?
You know, the whole show today being about honesty, truth, mm-hmm. and lies. He's saying the truth, it belongs to everyone. Lies are what we use to signal tribal membership. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know, especially in the political landscape.
Yeah.
If you're a member of one side or the other, or a free thinker.
Yes.
It's so easy to pick out the lies of the other side, and you know they're lies.
Right.
But you try to tell that to someone who's on, say, the other team.
Right.
And there's blinders on. They just...
And honestly, that's sort of the point of what I want to get to in this conversation as we progress. And, you know, we have more people call in at 617-266-6868, is that we want to have a conversation and say, you know, what are the lies that you have perpetuated yourself because you're in your tribe? You know, the truth really is. I mean, you know, it's a blinding sort of obvious statement. The truth will set you free. The lies are what we use to wrap ourselves.
The lies will win you an election.
The lies will win. Yeah, lies will win you an election. Lies will
win you a lot of stuff.
Wrap. Yeah, because
when coercion is involved.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the lies that were told in this last election. I mean, it's an enormous thing. And you know,
Ted Cruz's father.
Ted Cruz's father killed John Kennedy. Right.
No, he didn't kill him. He was involved.
He was involved in the Kennedy assassination. I mean, is that the
that's what biggest, our president thinks.
Is that the biggest whopper Trump has told? Well, no. I mean, this year he talked about grabbing some cats. I don't think he was lying about that. I think that was the truth. But he also said that he was
free, Donald.
He was supposed to be the Times Man of the Year this year, but he was too busy to go down for the photo shoot. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And a whopper. All right. I'm going to lay one more on people. This is a lie that we told everybody, and you could tell me if you think this is right or not, because we couldn't reveal the truth. The Iraq invasion, okay? First of all, there's a lot of lies around that, right? Weapons of mass destruction, did we really think there were some? I mean, we knew, first of all, the first lie, that there were never any weapons of mass destruction found, that's a lie. We found chemical weapons. They were left over from the old war. The last Iraq-Iran war, there's no evidence that Iraq had manufactured them, but we did find some of those. So, but the second one, the idea that we thought, oh, there really are a lot of weapons of mass destruction, and Saddam Hussein was stockpiling them, and that's why we had to invade, that was definitely a lie. And it was a lie that we told ourselves. The real reason that the United States went into Iraq was we had been attacked, right? Soft targets.
Yes.
Citizens had
10
been 10
terrorists from Saudi Arabia.
20 terrorists. 19. Somebody missed a flight.
Majority from Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Attacked us. So therefore, ergo, we must invade Iraq.
What? Right. Right. Exactly. Well, but that's the lie. The truth of the matter is
how
that...
How did they...
In order to defend the country, the president was faced with almost an impossible situation. How do you defend a country like ours that is open, right? That doesn't have incredible restrictions, doesn't have state security system. And so the best way they could defend the country is to say, we have to give the terrorists another target to attack. And so instead of having the terrorists come to the United States, they had the United States Army come to where they were. And so when we talk about the United States Army going into the situation where it would get in the way and be in harm's way, that's the actual truth of the situation. We talk about truth, talk about honesty, and we talk about political conversation. And we're looking forward to having a future political conversation with you guys. So we are talking about honesty in politics, honesty in political conversation.
Or the lack thereof.
Or the lack thereof. And I just want to finish up my point about Iraq. Right. There were not really weapons of mass destruction. That's not why we went into Iraq. We went into Iraq because putting the army in Iraq meant that terrorists could come there and attack it. And that made the United States safe, in my opinion. I think that if you think about it, it's an obvious military strategy. You never want to fight a battle on your own country, on your own home turf. You want to fight it on somebody else's turf. We decided that in order to keep Americans safe, we were going to put the American army into Iraq, and we were going to watch waves and waves of terrorists, armed militants, break themselves against the rock of the United States Army.
Did we decide that, or did the president decide
that? The president decided that.
With an authorization of use of force.
Right. The president decided that with a vote of authorization from Hillary Clinton.
Was it justified putting troops in harm's way because of those lies?
Well, it's an executive order. They did it to save American lives. They ended up costing, hundreds of thousands
way
of
more
Iraqi
lives. Than,
right.
I'm sure it cost more American lives than if you had not done it.
Yeah. I don't know. But we never had an honest conversation about it.
No.
That's what I know for sure.
No.
And having an honest conversation about it would have made a big difference.
The cowards in Congress would never want to actually vote to go to war with.
Yep. So I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Celia, who, first of all, runs a gastro tour business in London. If you're going to London, be sure to look up Celia Brooks Gastro Tours. Wonderful. Secondly, she talked about the fact that there's a lot of lies going on in our pharmaceutical industry right now.
Sure, yeah. You got the opioid crisis. You have our Mass State Attorney General, Maura Healey, suing a major manufacturer of opiates.
Because she says that really what they're doing is they're selling opiates that don't need to be manufactured, that they're trying to get people hooked.
And not following rules about disclosures with orders
right.
shipped to
Now, there is some there is some truth to the fact that most of the people who get addicted to heroin start on prescription medication, prescription opiates. Oxycodone or Oxycontin is a big one. Fentanyl.
Prescription painkillers.
Yeah. One of the other lies, though, that we're being sold by the pharmaceutical system is that they are working in our best interest all the time.
They're a manufacturer of a product. They're going to work in their own interest as yeah. such any other manufacturer that makes
right.
their product.
And there's one particular process that they have. It's called evergreening that I find particularly reprehensible. So normally when you get a patent for a drug, it's for 14 years. You can, however, improve upon that patent and extend it for another 14 years from when your improvement hits the market.
Because it's a different
drug. Right. It's a different iteration.
Do you know, with pharmacy patents, are you patenting the chemistry or are you mostly patenting processes that allow you to generate
It's drug? It's a little bit of both.
Because it seems dubious to me that you should be able to patent a chemical formula.
Well,
because that's a natural
Exactly.
law.
But it's worse than that. You can actually patent genomes. You can patent human genes. People who discover them, and this is a very controversial topic, but one of the interesting things about the patent process is that when you file the patent, especially for a pharmaceutical, you actually have to describe exactly how it's made. So once you file the patent, anybody else can make the drug.
So the government twofold has ruined entrepreneurship because one, they've eliminated the idea of a trade secret.
Right.
And two, they're giving monopolies to companies
right.
in perpetuity for different drugs.
Well, so it's not in perpetuity. They get 14 years.
But you say they can refresh it every...
Well, so they can refresh it essentially every time they come out with a modification of that drug. But the problem with that is that as a result, let's say that, I invent a drug and it's awesome And 2 years later, I make a way, I find a way to make it even more awesome. I'm not going to release that innovation to the drug.
Until your first patent is expired.
Exactly. Until I'm at 13 years into the first patent.
Yeah. Our resident doctor, Peter Everett, yes, chiming in, says both the molecules themselves and the processes are patented. That is just unbelievable to me.
Right. Because it's fundamentally a scientific You didn't discover, you didn't discover the chemical compound, right? I mean, you put them, maybe you put them together.
Or maybe you were the first to discover a reaction between chemical compounds, but that doesn't change the fact that it's always been there.
Exactly.
It could have been done at any time.
Right, exactly.
In the natural world.
Right. I mean, I think about the discovery of calculus, right? Leibniz,
yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite German.
Yeah, exactly. Your favorite German?
Oh, no, exaggerating.
Okay.
It's obviously,
Right. I would think that, especially as,
Miroslav Klose. He wasn't a German, though. He was a...
Yeah, no.
No, he played for the German team, but he wasn't German born, so...
What?
I'm going on a wild tangent here, but he was of German descent.
I think if you're talking about favorite Germans, it's pretty easy to go to soccer players almost immediately.
Right, yes.
So that's where I was going to go as well. He did have a phenomenal World Cup. All right, but we're
talking... Anytime I played FIFA, I would play as Bayern.
Gotcha. All right, so... We've talked about Social Security. We've talked about ACA. What are some of the other big political lies that are going on right now? When I think about the wall, right? The wall and immigration. So the biggest lie that's going on about that right now.
Klose born in Poland, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
How was he possibly playing?
The rules allow you, if your immediate family is German born.
When we take our
sports show.
Yeah, when our sports show finally takes
Welcome
off.
Welcome to Fishman Sports on WRKO.
Well, so that brings us to an interesting point, by the way. Our faithful listeners who are, our 2,000 or so live stream listeners, we want to mention the fact that we are probably not going to be on RKO much longer. I think we got this show and maybe next week's show. We're going to keep going with the podcast, so you guys can keep hearing us. We'll be here. I'm not sure for our listeners who are listening on AM 680, The Voice of Boston, where we're going to be. We're going to work something out. But for sure, check out the website, www.libertyontheair.com.
Yep. You can find the podcast, iTunes.com.
Yep.
Podcast, search for Liberty on the Air.
Yep.
Google Play.
I found Podmatic to be the best of all the streamers.
Sure, you can
right
stream
now.
It right from the source.
Yeah, Podmatic is really good. And that's, the podcast is a good way to keep in track with us and to consume us at any point in time. Because, talk radio really is the original social media.
Right. Charles Connolly says eventually the show will morph into a sports talk show. And, I'm not opposed to that. So,
what sports are you really qualified to talk about?
The four major sports.
All right. You could talk hockey?
Sure.
Well, let me ask you.
Please don't.
Okay.
I could talk football. I could talk baseball.
All right.
I can't really talk
basketball
or hockey.
We had an embarrassing hockey moment on the show, right, where we couldn't name the...
Because the head coach of the Bruins had changed, and you were making jokes about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Right, exactly.
And I said Bruce Cassidy.
Right.
And you kind of blanked and didn't know who that was.
Exactly. So an embarrassing moment for
you. They only practice
Gannis Arena is
100 yards over there.
Exactly. And they've never invited us over.
That's the Warrior Ice Arena, actually. Gannis Arena is where BU or Northeastern?
I don't know.
See, I'm really bad at Boston's trivia. So.
Fair enough. All right. So other political lies.
How about this Trump tax plan?
Well,
because there's, a lot of misinformation, if you will, being thrown around about it.
Yeah, well, no question about it. I mean, one of the biggest things about it. So, first of all, the idea that dropping the corporate tax rate is a bad thing, that is a political lie. Because you can ask almost any economist, and they'll tell you. Even Robert Krugman.
Even the quote, socialist country of Sweden has a lower corporate tax rate than the United States.
Right. And the reason,
which, by the way, is an open economy, a much more liberal, as in free market economy, than the United States is.
Right. Because, the thing that we always talk about is what would happen if the corporate tax rate were lowered and corporations had more money. Well, for one, they would probably pay their executives more because, darn it, those dang corporations and executives are going to pay these guys all this money. But what happens?
The thing is, the executive is already highly paid because it's such a competitive position.
Right.
But
and
what are corporations? They're just groups of people. So if you give a corporation more money, all that means is that people have more money.
Right. And those people pay taxes. And right. In fact, they get taxed at whatever is the top rate now, 39.8%, which was what the corporate tax was. So you haven't lost any money there by having the executives get paid more. But if they have more money, they might pay more money to the rest of their employees.
But they might lose tax revenue because those employees might make less. So what if in some backwards way, they want to keep the corporate tax higher?
They shouldn't.
To increase the coffers.
The government shouldn't want to keep taxes high so that people make less money. That's not a good.
That.
They shouldn't want to do that.
That sounds like 8 years of Obama tax policy to me.
Well, all right. Lowering the corporate income tax. And then, of course, the third thing is they could hire more workers. So that's a fascinating thing as well. We got Frank calling in. Frank's got a question about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is super hot right now. What do you know, Frank?
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
Great show.
Thanks.
Long time listener, second time caller.
I appreciate it.
We just wanted to just kind of touch on some Bitcoin. You know, I mean, cryptos right now are so hot. And it's so funny, you have all these naysayers of where you have a correction in the market, and all of a sudden they're like, I told you the bottom was going to drop out. Like, Bitcoin is still worth, like, just about $15,000 right now.
Yeah, what's it up from last year?
Exactly.
Right.
Anybody who tells you that, oh, I bought it a year ago, and now I'm flat broke, yeah, they're completely lying.
That's not how that works.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And so, the interesting thing about it is, when you think about why people start talking badly about Bitcoin, there's a couple things about it. One, they're haters, right? And that's easy.
True, but mostly I think they just don't understand.
Well, they don't understand. They don't understand. And then three, I think some people are scared that it threatens the natural order of commerce to have a currency that's outside of the control of government. Because if you and I want to exchange things, right, and we use a cryptocurrency, what happens? We can do it.
Well, it depends if it's a decentralized cryptocurrency, but I think you see a lot of these guys are now pushing Ripple, which is actually kind of having people kind of perk up their ears at it. I know Bruce Fenton was talking a lot about this, that Ripple is not a decentralized cryptocurrency. It is a cryptocurrency.
Yes.
And it's being the reason that other people are getting into Ripple is because they're saying, oh, it's backed
by.
I have to look it up. It's an organization, though.
Interesting.
And it doesn't have the same rules and protections that, the original OG Bitcoin does.
Right. So it's interesting because we can talk a little bit about crypto in general. And we had a big crypto show.
Make this show go from sports to nerdy crypto. I think that's...
That's good.
I think it's a great idea.
All right. We just got to squeeze in a little bit of Dungeons & Dragons at the end of
Never
the show.
Never played.
What?
I know.
You're a real disappointment.
I'm not a software engineer. I'm not as geeky as you.
All right. I'm the Uber geek. I'm going to drive you.
We'll play a game of Dungeons & Dragons on my ride home that you give me.
All right. That sounds good. So when we talk about crypto, we talk about this amazing ride that's going on. And sure. Thanks very much for the call, Frank. One of the important things that we want to talk about in that is that there is people say there's no value to any of the currencies. There's nothing that backs it.
Right.
But that's actually not true. Okay, because it's not just a currency, it's also a network. Okay, and if I have a telephone, the value of the telephone is nothing if I have the only telephone in the world because I can't call anybody. But if you have a telephone and I can call you, now the value has increased. And the more people that are added in, the more value that's involved. So that's network theory, the network theory of price, and that's an actual thing. And that's what makes the currency valuable. The more people who are in it, the more valuable the currency becomes. And Bitcoin actually has a fascinating thing about it, that the more people who are involved in Bitcoin, the more people who are mining, it changes the algorithm in terms of how you're actually mining the Bitcoin. Ken and I were talking about this earlier.
It changes the criteria by which miners complete blocks and earn the reward for doing that. But the reason why that scales is from my understanding, is that they want the average block to take 10 minutes.
Interesting.
And so depending on the number of miners, you need to scale the requirement for mining to be completed to keep that time base relatively consistent, which is really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it's well thought out. Genius program in the first place. So one of the other fascinating things about crypto, though, is that the idea that it's going to go away, it's not going to go away. Governments cannot shut it down any more than they could shut down email. Okay? The network is too ingrained into people's lives right now. I mean, maybe in North Korea, people don't have access to email. But even in China, people find their way around the Great Firewall. It's risky, but I don't ever envision a situation in which the draconian forces are going to clamp down so entirely that all the cryptocurrencies are going to go away.
Right. And I think what some people miss is that Bitcoin may go away. It might. It might fail. You know, a lot of times first to market doesn't end up being the long-term winner. Yep. Dot-com boom. There's a lot of dot-coms that were sold for a lot of money that are sadly no longer with us.
I worked for one.
But blockchain ledger technology is here to stay.
No, not
that
just
is a
here
technical
to stay.
Innovation.
Yeah, it has, and it has changed the world.
Right.
And people don't even realize how much blockchain is going to impact every single thing that they do. But it is an amazing innovation. The fact that you can really keep track of things that have happened and record them accurately forever.
What do you think about this comment from Charles Connolly on the Facebook live stream? He says, the network effect of Bitcoin is a lie. We are telling ourselves Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme. There are like 100 people cornering the Bitcoin market and manipulating the price.
That's not true, though.
New to markets, people trying to attempt to manipulate pricing.
Right. It's definitely not true to market.
But it's not a Ponzi scheme. That doesn't really qualify.
And it's not 100 people who are manipulating the market. I mean, Ken, you had an encounter the other day with
a gentleman. Yeah. I met a guy, a very friendly guy who was very open, showed me his wallet. His Bitcoin wallet had 399 Bitcoins, which at the time was when the Bitcoin was priced at about 18,000 USD.
Yep.
So you do the math there. What is that?
7 million?
7 million, yeah. Something like that?
Nice.
But he said he used to have 2,500 that he's been selling off over the years.
Right. I mean, there is – let's look at it this way. I'm pretty sure that there are more Bitcoin missing than any one person owns at this point in time.
Interesting.
You consider the 850,000 lost out of Mt. Gox and the – what was it? 650,000 seized at Silk Road? I don't remember exactly. But, I mean, it's over a million.
I'm sure some government contractors somewhere are secretly using them.
Maybe,
trading them.
Maybe. Right. Right.
Like their upper management even knows what they are.
Well, it's funny you think about the fact they seized these, all these Bitcoins. What do they do with them?
What do they actually seize? The private public? Do they have the private keys?
Yes.
The wallets that they're in?
Yeah. They should.
Sure, they should sell them as civil assets for a future.
They should keep them and sell them. Exactly right. I mean,
or maybe that they're actually keeping them in case. They
right. Maybe
they keep,
maybe they're keeping them to manipulate the, as Charles points out, manipulate the.
Yeah, we invented a cryptocurrency to get around central planning manipulators of the federal government.
Right.
And they've managed to do it anyway.
It's genius. So that's an interesting thing because, I mean, the fundamental part of what makes a cryptocurrency work is the fact that it's valuable for us in exchange. And if it's not, people will use it.
Right.
There's no lie. The price goes back and forth based on the valuation. Now, are there people who are investing in Bitcoin? Yes. But that's dumb. But there have always been dumb investors, right? There have been people who are dumb who invest in real estate. Okay. Fundamentally, real estate's not really a good investment because it doesn't increase in value particularly. You should own a home. That makes a lot of sense because then you don't pay rent anymore. But investing in real estate?
Well, you pay lifetime rent to the federal government or your state government, local government.
Okay, property tax, yes.
That's rent. Bundled up as a joint responsibility payment to your neighbors.
Yes, okay. Yes, fine. You're paying a form of property tax as a form of rent. Pushing that aside, you're not paying rent to a landlord anymore, except for the federal government.
Or actually, local government. Municipal,
right. So... You're saving more
money.
Which
is arguably worse.
And you're getting equity back when you sell the house.
Sure.
Which you don't get when you rent.
Right.
So, that's another example of sort of this lie along the way that, and we were talking about the tax plan too, so I want to come back to that.
Yeah, if you'll indulge me, jumping back to the tax plan, I know we went on an awesome tangent, and I'm very happy to have gone on a Bitcoin.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
Last thought on Bitcoin, though.
Yep.
What about Bitcoin saving lives in places like Venezuela and Zimbabwe? Yep. Places where their centralized government and currencies have failed.
Yeah.
And they're finding a tremendous wealth in being able to use things like cryptocurrencies.
Cryptocurrency is a huge boon for a lot of people. I think there's a lot of, haters out there. But, hating it doesn't make it stop. It doesn't make it not a viable form of currency. A lot of people are doing transactions with it. Same thing with Ethereum. Same thing with other cryptocurrencies. All right. Back to the tax plan.
Yeah, I wanted to transition back to the tax plan. I found this interesting study from the Urban Bookings Tax Policy Center, which is a center-left think tank, analyzed the tax plan and analyzed people's opinions of Trump's tax plan that he just signed into law. This is what people think the tax plan will do. 50% of people think it will increase their taxes.
Yeah.
25% think it will keep their taxes the same. And 14% of people think it will decrease their taxes owed.
And so we're missing a chunk there. 11%.
Right. Here's what the tax plan actually does, according to this group. 5% of people will see an increase. 15% will have their taxes stay the same. And 80% of people will see a decrease in their taxes. Why the big perception gap between what this tax policy center says the tax will actually do and what people think it's going to do?
Do you think that there are lies coming out about what's going to happen with the tax plan?
Obviously, yeah.
Well, I think that
if you watched any of the left to center media recently about it, they're
sure.
Well, sky is falling, only rich people, blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's no question about it that if you tell a person who makes $30,000 a year that they're going to get a 10% tax break, and they say, oh, so I'm getting $3,000 back, they're paying $30,000 a year. Exactly. They say, oh, I'm getting $3,000 back. And you say, but that guy is getting $3 million back.
Well,
he's like, oh, that's unfair.
Yeah, but that was only 2%.
Right, exactly.
It was only 2% cut.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a difference in the percentage and understanding, the wealthy are wealthy. Okay, so their sums that they pay are always going to seem extravagant to us, no matter what they are. When Warren Buffett complained that he wasn't paying enough taxes because his secretary was being taxed at 18% and he was being taxed at 16%, but he paid $7 million in taxes that year.
Well, when the bottom 40% of income earners in the United States are paying zero federal income tax, they cannot get a tax break on paying nothing.
Right.
So the idea that we're hurting the lower class by not giving them a tax break is absurd because they're not paying any taxes.
Right. In reality, the thing that benefits the poor the most is to get money out of the hands of the government and into the economy. Because when it's in the economy, it's available for them to earn. It's available for all of us to earn. And so the best benefit, and that's why cutting the corporate income tax is going to be very good. There are a lot of things that I think are poorly done in this tax plan. The estate tax, you can make a strong argument that the estate tax is ridiculous to go after at this point in time. I don't know why Trump, I do know why Trump stuck it in there, but, and other things, going after graduate students, that's just bad
optics. Which that did not end up in the final bill.
Oh, really? They got that out?
That's correct, yeah.
Interesting.
To pivot back, though, because the show started out being the honesty and truth show.
Yep.
With regards to the tax plan, I just think I'm sick of people willing to lie.
Right.
To be a never Trumper. If you listen to this show before, you know that we're not the biggest fans of President Trump.
Nope.
But we're not unwilling to say this one thing he did is good, this one thing is bad.
Right.
It should not be so hard for people out there
and
to say this thing he did was good. This thing he did, I do not agree with. This thing he did, I did.
And that's the conclusion, is that if you are honest, you have to be able to find something that your opponent has done that you say, you know what, that was a good thing. And I can point to certain things that Hillary Clinton did and say, you know what, that was a reasonable decision. I can point to some things
Investing in a private email server, great decision.
Exactly. Some things that
don't
Trump
trust did. The government with your emails.
Yeah, exactly right. I hope you're listening. There's no question. That's the point that we want to get back to. And as you know, we're sort of running against. I want people to think about the fact that they can improve our dialogue by being willing to be honest about the fact that everything the other person does, everything the other side does, is not bad. You have to find a way to move beyond that. Because when we have this conversation and we say, your side, everything that you've done is bad, you're being dishonest. And when you buy into being dishonest, you buy into perpetuating this breakdown, this end of what we're supposed to be doing in our political conversation. We're supposed to be able to talk, and we can't have conversations if we're not honest anymore. So, to reiterate what we said before, we don't know how much longer we're going to be on RKO. This show, next show for sure, www.libertyontheair. That we're going to be consistent at. You can always get in touch with us. You can email me directly, dan@libertyontheair. You can subscribe to our podcast there.
You can email Ken, too, if you feel like it.
Yeah, yep. Ken has his own Liberty on the Air address.
If you want to fill my
inbox. Yeah, if you want to ask Ken technical questions about, if you want to complain about the quality of the live stream.
Yes, any live stream complaints should be directed to Ken at Liberty on the Air. Well, I will review them.
Especially, you should ask Ken about that specious noise, that artifact that we hear occasionally. I don't hear it right now, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. Whatever it is, you can email any one of us. Follow up.
I hear it right now.
Next year is going to be our end of the year show. We're going to review the year in Liberty. We're going to talk a little bit in memoriam. A couple of big figures in Liberty passed away in the year. We're probably going to celebrate a little bit some of the stuff that we've done here on the show, some of the conversations that we've had.
Look forward, 2018 preview, perhaps?
Yeah, 2018, right, exactly. We'll talk
it's
about
a big year.
We will shamelessly promote my campaign. My campaign for a state auditor.
We have Larry Sharp.
Yeah, we have Larry Sharp, who's going to be the next governor of New York.
Right.
It's going to be a big year for Liberty across the thing, and it's going to be a terrible year, I think, for the GOP in the midterm elections. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. We'll see what happens. All those things we talk about in the future. As always, post your questions on our Facebook page. We'll be happy to get back to them this season. Give us ideas, things you want to talk about on the show. We're available for, you have a Liberty event that you want promoted on the air in the Massachusetts area. Send us a message. We're happy to read them out on the air. And as always, we want your conversations to be heard here. So this audience, you guys have done a great job over the course of the year in talking about Liberty, in being involved in Liberty, and making a difference. When we talk about what we want, it's not right, it's not left, it's up. Up is the direction of Liberty. We want you to exercise that Liberty. Stand up, make a difference, make your voice heard. And when you're doing that, you're putting Liberty out there in the air. We're Liberty on the Air. Thanks for listening.
Merry Christmas, Skippy.